It's a trap!
Hello and welcome to episode number 124 of Radio TCX,
your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan.
And I'm Carson Ray. Glad to be back in the studio.
Yeah, we've missed you these past couple weeks. Thankfully, we had some other guys who were able to step in, so shout out to Kyle, John, and Vic for covering in your absence.
Yeah, they did a pretty good job. It was actually pretty fun to listen to the show, not knowing what was going to happen. But I am glad to be back in the driver's seat. It was too long.
And hopefully your time off gave you some new perspective so we can talk about some more X-Wing today.
Yeah, well, it really took that long just to find my microphone and all the boxes I packed.
Well, hopefully today we can ease you back into that X-Wing podcasting lifestyle, talking about Wave 1 of X-Wing 2nd Edition.
Yeah, absolutely. 2nd Edition is rapidly approaching its September 13th release date, so let's get right to it. All right, so this week we wanted to look at how each of the factions are going to look just based off their initial release kits, so not including any of the conversion kits.
When Wave 1 of 2nd Edition launches in September, there will be a total of 7 Wave 1 expansions available, plus the core set, as well as the Saw's Renegades and TIE Reaper expansions, which have already released. We still don't know what the format setup is going to be for 2nd Edition, because we're going to have all that, you know, legacy content available via the conversion kits, as well as what's just going to be released wave by wave in 2nd Edition. I think it's pretty safe to assume that we're going to have, I hope, a couple different formats here. Fantasy Flight has mentioned a little bit. There are going to be some tournament kits that call out specific ships to play to an event or something like that. And even some of the developers have teased that there's going to be not only a way to play with the conversion kits competitively, but just with the content that's released wave to wave.
Right, so at least for some events, you're going to be playing just the 3 ships per faction on release.
So today we wanted to dig into what those factions are going to look like with what the available pilot and upgrade cards are going to be for each faction and kind of get more of a feel for what the faction themes and mechanics are going to be in that initial wave.
Right, and one of the cool things about 2nd Edition is that they can use the app to create different formats, which will then in turn create different metagames. So the initial wave release metagame will probably look a lot different than the metagame, including all of the conversion kit material. So just as far as a podcasting perspective and a player's perspective, I think that's really exciting to be able to pursue multiple metagames. And it looks like, you know, now that we have the addition of Lando's Millennium Falcon, that all 3 of the factions are going to be pretty balanced going into that initial release. So I think this could be a pretty cool format.
Well, I think it's also nice to narrow our discussion a little bit. We've been speaking very broadly because a lot of the attention has been on those conversion kits ever since we saw the official partial unboxing from Fantasy Flight, and we've started to see some full unboxings showing up online. Assuming that there are going to be these distinct formats here between just the released content versus the legacy released content, they are definitely going to have different metagames here because your options are obviously a lot more narrow with only about 3 ships available per faction when Wave 1 launches. I think we should start by talking about, let's talk about the Rebel faction here, get a general idea what's going on. I think one of the benefits of having these smaller releases or having a tournament format that just focuses on this Wave 1 content from 2nd Edition is that I think this is going to be the most accessible format for players who are new to the game, because obviously they're not going to have that full collection available to them to just get those conversion kits and have all those ships. So if you're someone just getting into X-Wing, these are really the ships you're going to play with right out the gate.
Well, and honestly, I mean, even from a veteran player's perspective, this is probably how I want to start my 2nd Edition experience. You know, just getting the feel for how the basic ships work, and then, you know, bring in all of the other options after I've gotten a few games under my belt. Now, before we get into this, I do want to mention, we still, frustratingly so, do not have any of the points values for any of the ships or upgrade cards officially announced by Fantasy Flight. So, you know, as far as the power of these ships, we kind of just have to speculate based off our understanding of how they function in the current edition of X-Wing.
I think that's an ongoing frustration, though, for a lot of us, you know, longtime X-Wing players, that we really have been given no information about the, you know, point balancing or even the general ranges these ships are going to come in. So I guess, you know, there's a fair bit of assumptions to be made. We can still look at the mechanics, and obviously point costs can change over time. So if anything's really out of whack, obviously, they're going to be able to adjust that. It does make the conversation a little bit more difficult, though. Either way, though, we can focus in on the mechanics and the general themes that we're seeing in second edition.
All right, so let's get to Rebels. The Rebel faction has two small base ships and a medium ship. They have the X-Wing, the Y-Wing, and the U-Wing.
The X-Wing and Y-Wing, of course, are going to be coming in that first wave of second edition content. The Rebel U-Wing is actually already available in a second edition format thanks to the Saw's Renegades expansion.
Yeah, and that Saw's Renegade expansion is also going to come with a lot of X-Wing pilots, giving the X-Wing quite a range of pilot options on that initial release.
Yeah, so let's start with the X-Wing, because this is the ship, individual ship, that's going to get the most in terms of available pilot cards right from the get-go. You're going to have a bunch of X-Wing pilots available in the core set, in addition to the X-Wing standalone expansion, which will come with even more pilots. And then you've still got the Saw's Renegades expansion, which already also came with a bunch of X-Wing pilots. So right from the start of second edition, you've got a lot of options for the X-Wing, which seems appropriate since this game is called X-Wing.
Yeah, and the X-Wing's just a really well-rounded platform. It's got 6 hit points. It's got that native white barrel roll, plus the servo motor S-foils gives it access to the boost action. So quite a mobile ship and a really good platform. It's got 3 attack dice backed up by 6 hull and 2 agility. Just a really well-rounded ship.
We can also see that a lot of the X-Wing pilots bring some really great abilities. We've got Luke Skywalker at Initiative 5, who is a Force-sensitive pilot. He's got 2 Force charges, which he can spend to augment his offense or defense, changing focuses to the relevant result. And he's got an awesome pilot ability that synergizes with that. Whenever he's targeted for an attack, he gains one of those Force charges back.
Yeah, and Luke is going to be a great ace for the Rebellion. But it's cool that the X-Wing pilot range, you know, you have pilots like Luke Skywalker, Wedge Antilles, and you're going to be much more of your ace X-Wings. But then you have ships like Biggs Darklighter and Garvin Dries, who are going to be much more of your support utility role players. So you have this really versatile platform, and then you have a lot of options to choose from for your pilots that are really going to make these ships play very differently.
Well, and one of the major themes that we actually see in the Rebel faction is this focus on support and synergy. Looking at all the pilots we've seen so far between all 3 factions in Wave 1, really, the Rebels have a crazy amount of options in terms of ships that support each other either through their abilities or upgrade cards. And this focus on synergy seems to be one of the real focuses of the Rebel faction in second edition so far.
Yeah, we're going to talk about, you know, how certain factions have certain focuses, but usually that just means they have a few options within that certain area of the game. But when we're talking about list building synergy, the Rebels really have just a wealth of options.
Overall, though, the X-Wing does look like a really strong starting point for the game. It seems like the, you know, utility baseline ship. It can function as an ace, but it's pretty sturdy. It's got some really good mobility options. I think more so than it did in first edition, I think the X-Wing in second edition is going to feel like a ship that kind of represents all the best parts of the game.
Yeah, what I think is pretty interesting about the X-Wing is you could have quite a few different 4 X-Wing lists, and they could all play pretty differently. So while you might not have too much total ship variety, within just the X-Wing, there's so much variety.
And while we are seeing a lot of variety in the X-Wing, we're seeing even more variety and utility in the Y-Wing.
Yeah, and while the Y-Wing doesn't have as many pilot options, just the chassis itself has quite a few ways it can be loaded up.
And I think that's one of the big changes that we've seen in second edition is that the promise of the Y-Wing in first edition, just because it was released so early on, it didn't have access to a lot of the kind of utility options you'd expect from a ship like the Y-Wing. So I think, you know, in the Star Wars universe, this ship's supposed to be your go-to utility ship, load it out however you want to, configure it however you want to. In the first edition of X-Wing, it really had a pretty limited application. It had some turret options, but it didn't really receive any bombing options until much later in the game's lifetime. And it was generally a little bit expensive for what it was able to do. I think in second edition, it's feeling more like a truly adaptable platform, like the way it was intended to be. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that since this is a reboot of the game, they know all these mechanics that they introduced over time in first edition are available to them right from the start. So we know the Y-Wing has access to things like bombs or turrets or torpedoes, and you can load it out any way you want to fit in your list.
Yeah, and within this format, this is going to be the Rebels' only access to bombs. It's going to be their only turret ship and perhaps be their best torpedo ship. It is going to compete with the X-Wing there, But, you know, having that reload option to bring back charges onto your torpedo might bring it over the X-Wing.
And again, this is a ship that really benefits from that synergy focus we're seeing in the Rebel faction. It's got a fair number of options if it needs to get multiple points of modification on its torpedoes. We know in second edition, it's a lot harder to get that double action economy that's focused in like offensive mods. So getting both a focus and a target lock generally seems to take a little bit more effort in second edition than it did in first edition. But the Rebels thankfully have a lot of support abilities, things like Garvin Drazen and X-Wing, who can pass a focus token to a friendly ship, or Dutch Vander, which can grant a friendly ship a target lock. There's a lot of options here where you can get both a focus and target lock, meaning that the Y-Wing is going to be a great option there if you want to get some fully modded torpedo shots.
Yeah, or you have the 2-2 brothers, just a lot of synergy all over the place. So in general, for Rebels, you're going to have your X-Wings and Y-Wings dealing the damage, but then they have the option to be supported by the U-Wing, which is going to be the probably most resilient support platform.
And we've seen some pretty substantial changes between the first edition Ewing and the second edition Ewing. I think the most interesting one right away is that it saw a whole base size change. It's down from a large base in first edition to that brand new medium base in second edition, which grants it a lot more mobility, something it struggled with in the first edition of the game.
Yeah, absolutely. That extra rotation when you stop seems very powerful and does make this more of a mixed support ship and partial gunboat.
Yeah, it's still got some decent offense there with 3 attack dice. It has a native 2 agility as long as you're using the attack side of that pivot wing title. But at the same time, you've got a lot more mobility options here. The U-Wing in 2nd edition can rotate 90 degrees while it's in its landing side of the pivot wing title, which gives it some ability to turn around abruptly.
Absolutely. And then beyond that, it has the coordinate action, where, you know, action economy is much more reined in 2nd edition. So that option to give one of your ships, you know, another action, be able to get target lock and focus on your ships firing proton torpedoes, seems very powerful. Just concentrate your actions.
And while all 3 factions in the first wave of second edition are going to have access to that coordinate action, I think the Rebels can really benefit from it, though, given their access to torpedoes. Getting 2 points of modification on those seems like it's going to make them a lot more effective.
I mean, I think the Rebels have the most torpedo options. We're not 100% sure because we also don't know all the upgrade options for every ship. But from what we've seen from the articles, both the X-Wing and Y-Wing feature torpedoes, and there is a lot of value in setting up target lock and focus for those proton torpedoes.
I am pretty excited about the new U-Wing, though. That was a ship that never really got its time to shine in first edition. And I think, honestly, just changing it to a medium base and adding that ability to rotate 90 degrees or 180 degrees with the pivot wing title is going to go a long way in making this ship playable in this game. Overall, looking at the themes and mechanics in the Rebel Alliance, I think there's clearly a real focus here on synergy between ships and supporting each other. We've got a lot of token passing and action granting between all these ships.
Absolutely. I mean, that support right there seems like their strongest theme. And I think you're probably doing list building wrong if you're not including at least some of those support abilities for the Rebels. They also have a strong focus on torpedoes. And this kind of goes off of those support abilities. You know, they have the coordinate action from the U-Wing, but also just a lot of other ways to get another action through their synergistic pilot abilities or upgrades to be able to get double modifications on torpedoes, or just be Luke and use your force charges to modify your torpedo.
And they do have access to astromechs, which I think is going to be important. It's a little hard to say right now. We know that regenerating abilities have been toned down substantially, given that they have a cap now, and they typically seem to assign a weapons disabled token. But right now, they have pretty exclusive access to those astromech upgrades, so it's going to be another distinct feature that separates them right away from the other factions. I mean, honestly, overall, I think this is a pretty versatile faction here. Focus on synergy, but you've got a lot of loadout options for these 3 ships. And I think this is going to be a really good place for new players to start. You're going to get an X-Wing in the core set, so you don't have to invest too much extra money to get a full squad going. I think if you're trying to get into X-Wing 2nd Edition, it's probably a smart choice to start in that Rebel faction.
Yeah, and I do really like the balance between, you know, the X-Wing is just such a well-rounded ship, whereas you can really kit your Y-Wing to a very specific role. So I do like that duality between their small ships, and then either can be supported by the U-Wing. So I think that's a pretty good foundation to build a lot of lists from.
Okay, so we've talked about the Rebels. Let's move on to that Galactic Empire. Again, three ships in the initial Wave 1 release of 2nd Edition.
Yeah, so just like the Rebels, the Imperials will have two small ships and a medium ship. They have the TIE LN fighter and the TIE Advanced, as well as the TIE Reaper in a medium base. And it seems like the Imperial faction are all going to be sporting these TIE LN fighters starting off. Now, while we don't know points, I think it's pretty safe to say that this is going to be substantially the cheapest fighter when you compare it to all of the factions.
Yeah, the basic TIE LN fighter, which is that most common TIE fighter we saw in most of the original trilogy movies, I think it's pretty safe to assume that this will be the cheapest ship here. But in first edition X-Wing, that was a really strong characteristic of it early on because it was probably the most efficient ship you could get out on the board in terms of the value you got versus its point cost.
Right, and having more ships than your opponent does generate an action economy of its own just because you're able to take more focus actions across all of your ships, and their modifications will run out after your first few attacks on a single target.
And while the art of blocking was kind of lost in first edition, you didn't really have swarms out there anymore to try and upset your opponent's synergies. I think that's going to be a really viable strategy early on in second edition for sure. When you have, you know, three or four TIE fighters in a list even, those ships are very mobile. They've got access to that barrel roll repositioning action. And since it's a lot less common to get free modification, those actions become a lot more valuable in second edition. So if you're able to throw a TIE fighter out in front of one of your opponent's more expensive ships and deny them access to their action, that's a lot of value you're getting there. They're not going to get that much defensive action economy. So if you can block one of their more expensive ships and then unload on it with the rest of your swarm, I think that's going to be a pretty viable way to win some games.
Well, and then just looking at the pilot options we have for the TIE fighters, we have Hal Runner, who still has her amazing support ability of allowing friendly ships at range one to reroll an attack die. That really dramatically boosts the firepower of your two attack die ships and makes facing down a TIE swarm something that's pretty terrifying. So out of the gate, that seems like a very successful strategy to be pursuing. You also have new pilots like Aiden Versio, who has a strong support ability to protect your other TIE fighters, which I think is mainly going to be used for Hal Runner, but it's also nice to have the option to protect your other TIE fighters.
Yes, Aiden's ability is pretty strong defensively, going to go great in a swarm, which seems to be one of the focuses of the Imperial factions. She's got that new charge feature there, so she's got a single charge there, and then when a friendly TIE LN fighter at range 0 to 1 would suffer one or more damage, you can spend that charge to prevent it from taking any damage. This is great. It works on an adjacent ship or it works on yourself that one time, so you can kind of basically cancel out one of your opponent's attacks, giving you a little bit of tempo control in trying to gain the advantage and get some damage out before your opponent can.
Yeah, just dare that Rebel player to fire their proton torpedoes when you have Aiden still active.
So I think between what we know about the TIE LN, there's going to be a strong swarm focus here. I wouldn't expect either of the other two factions here to be able to put out as many ships on the table as the Imperials are going to be able to with the TIE fighter. So I think swarming your opponent through sheer volume of ships is probably going to be one of the early Imperial strategies in the game.
Now, you do have access to the TIE Advanced, which is comparable to the X-Wing. It's only a two-attack dice ship, but with its advanced targeting ship ability, it has the option to roll an additional attack die on a ship you have target locked.
That ability kind of gives it three attack dice. It's a little bit halfway in between. It has kind of a cost there because you have to have the target lock. Unlike the first edition of the game, though, you're able to actually spend that target lock and still get the benefit of the extra die and converted hit to crit result. So it's a little bit more useful than the first edition version. But when the ship counts are a little bit higher, this is a less effective ability.
Right, because then perhaps you're going to be changing target priorities more often. And so if you have to reacquire that target lock each turn, your damage output is just not going to be as consistent, or your defense is going to suffer because you're not taking your green actions.
And since actions are so valuable here, you don't get as many of them, and there are, especially on the TIE Advanced, not that many linked action options. It's going to be pretty hard for most of the TIE Advanced pilots to really leverage that advanced target computer across multiple ships. I guess the one exception would be Darth Vader, right?
Right. I mean, Darth Vader gets access to more actions by spending force charges per his pilot ability. And just starts out with so many force charges, so it's not a big deal if you spend your action target locking, because then you still have three force charges to use on defense. while overall it might not seem as strong as the X-Wing, it's definitely going to shine in, you know, one-on-one combat or, you know, just picking off that key target in your opponent's list, just focusing that down. I think the TIE Vance does have some strong options. Obviously, Darth Vader is a strong ace, and you have some other good options like Merrick Steel. I think a list of just all TIE Vances, you know, if we compare it to a list of all X-Wings, is probably not going to feel as strong. But, you know, if you take one or two TIE Vance and pair them with a bunch of TIE Fighters, I think then you have some interesting options.
And when compared to the X-Wing, it hurts the TIE Vance a little bit that it doesn't have access to that proton torpedo slot. We know it has access to the missile slot, but from the missile we've seen so far, it looks like it's not going to be as strong compared to, you know, proton torpedo's sheer volume of attack dice. I think we will see a place, though, for TIE Vance, though. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw Darth Vader, who's incredibly potent at Initiative 6 and an ability to take multiple actions in a round using those Force charges, paired up with a whole slew of TIE Fighters. I think that could be a very viable strategy. You can focus down a ship and have a great late-game ship in the form of Darth Vader, and at the same time, you can overwhelm your opponent's defenses with just a bunch of little TIE Fighter shots.
I think the ship that really ties this whole faction together, though, is going to be that TIE Reaper. That was not intentional, but...
Okay, not an intentional pun.
No, the TIE Reaper is just such an interesting ship. I mean, in my opinion, it's going to be the premier control ship for Wave 1, obviously competing against the options that the Y-Wing has available to it. But having that jam action plus some pretty powerful control crew options, I think is pretty solid.
Well, and this ship's going to be pretty mobile, too. It's on a medium base, and its dial's not amazing, but it does have that advanced ailerons ship ability, so it's going to be performing a one straight or one bank most of the time before it moves, which gives it a lot of movement options, not just like in terms of increasing its speed, but also you can do some funky stuff like do a one bank in one direction and then turn in the opposite direction. So you've got some positioning options. It does have that red coordinate there, so that's going to grant some action economy to any other friendly ship. A very universal way to get some synergy in your list. And it has access to that white jam option, where it's going to be able to throw out those jam tokens and interrupt your opponent's synergies, which, looking at the Rebel faction and their focus on passing out tokens, being able to interrupt those combinations is going to be a huge strategy for the Imperials.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's interesting because, you know, with our TIE Fighter pilot ability, we really want to be in a tight formation. But with those ailerons on the medium base TIE Reaper, it's going to be going all over the place. And I think really force Imperials to find some different ways to fly than they have been previously. But I think they'll be rewarded for it. The TIE Reaper, I think, seems pretty exciting. You know, it's got control, it's got support, and it's got decent damage output. It'll start on one end and then just zip all the way across.
Looking at the overall themes that we're seeing in the Imperial faction, it doesn't seem to have a lot of different options here. We do see that there's a strong emphasis on that swarm playstyle, just by virtue of having the presumably really inexpensive TIE Fighter, a couple named TIE Fighter pilots that emphasize flying in formations and flying in swarms. There are definitely some distinct limitations here in the opening faction. They're all locked in those forward-firing arcs, which could be a pretty impeding factor depending on where they compare in cost with some of the turreted ships we see in the other factions.
Yeah, I mean, so that's interesting because that's always sort of been a theme of the Empire, to just have a emphasis on forward firing arcs, not many turret options, but they usually made up for it with repositioning actions. But now repositioning actions have been given out much more generously to all ships. So that feels less like an Imperial ability. But they still don't have much turret options. So I think the Imperials are in an interesting place just with this format. You know, on initial release, the TIE Fighter seems very good, and they do have some good options with the TIE Advanced. And I, you know, I honestly think the TIE Reaper is pretty good too, but then when we look overall at how this faction is comparing to the other factions, it doesn't seem to have as many options. Now, that swarm playstyle might be very good, and I think there will be a few different iterations of how you're going to play that swarm, whether you go full TIE Fighters or mix in an Advanced or Reaper. I think, you know, all those can be successful, but it just doesn't seem to have as many different playstyle options as the other two factions.
I agree with you on that front. I think amongst the three factions we're getting in the Wave 1 launch, I think the Imperials are going to have the hardest time just because of that limited number of options and just overall the low attack dice values. It might be rough. Now, if swarms prove to be really effective in second edition, we're not sure how that's going to shake out right now. But if they are really effective, that might be all the Imperials need to stay relevant in the game. Just having a lot of ships there and have that be their main strategy until they get some more ships in later waves. So to wrap up our conversation here, I think we should move on to your favorite faction, Carson, Scum and Villainy.
Yeah, and actually, Scum looks pretty great in this Wave 1 metagame. It's definitely got the most ship options. It's got two small bases, one medium base ship, and a large base ship.
So right away, we've got more ship options here. Obviously, this is the Fang Fighter and the Fire Spray going to be released, as well as that Lando's Millennium Falcon expansion, which will come with both the customized YT-1300, as well as the small base escape craft ship. So let's start by looking at the Fang Fighter. This ship obviously debuted in the Rebels TV show and is actually one of my favorite Star Wars ship designs out there. It was really fun in X-Wing First Edition while it was still a relevant ship in the metagame. And it's just a really cool design, and I actually like the design they've carried over into the second edition of the game.
Yeah, I think the Fangs are going to feel pretty similar to how they did when they were first released in First Edition. I really like, you know, having that focus linked to the boost and barrel roll actions, as well as that ship ability, the Concordia Face-Off, giving an evade result when you're at range one in your opponent's firing arc.
It rewards really aggressive play, which is a huge focus of the Fang Fighter, trying to get in there and do a bunch of damage. So it's rewarding you defensively with that aggressive play, which is really cool because there's actually not a great many ways to mod your defense in second edition, since a lot of the token stacking that we saw in first edition has gone away.
And it's got a lot of great pilot options. You know, you have Fenrau at initiative 6, who just gets to roll extra dice, which is great. But then you also have Old Tarok, who at initiative 5 now, I like a whole lot more than his first edition version. Being pilot skill 7 was just not the best, but initiative 5, you're competing with a lot of other great ships. So I think you have some really good ace options. And then, you know, you have an initiative 1 or an initiative 4 generic. So I think the Fang is interesting in that it's, for Scum, going to be your premier ace ship, but then also be your generic filler ship.
And seeing its action options there with both a focus, a target lock, and then a boost linked into a red focus and a barrel roll linked into a red focus, I think we're going to get a lot of the feel that we saw in first edition with Fang Fighters using a Tawny Mind Link, where oftentimes you were using those repositioning actions because you already had access to a focus from somewhere else. I think it's going to reward that very aggressive play where you get in there, take that boost, and then get that focus to mod your offense or defense if you're in a risky situation.
Yeah, and we do know from those threat cards that the Fang Fighter does have access to 2 modification slots, which is pretty interesting. Make it feel a bit more like a TIE Interceptor in some senses. You know, you can give it perhaps hull and shield upgrades, making it much more resilient. Or we know there's the new Afterburners modification, which gives you a free boost action right after you execute a 3-5 speed maneuver.
And we also know the Fang Fighter has access to the torpedo slot. So I think that having torpedoes is a huge advantage, especially in the early life of X-Wing 2nd Edition. And being able to combine that with a coordinate action from one of those escape crafts is going to mean you're going to be able to have a decent amount of damage output. Maybe not as easy to get at thanks to all the synergy abilities Rebels have, but still an option there to put out a lot of damage at range.
Yeah, so when you're looking for damage out of a small base ship, you're definitely going to go for the Fang Fighter. But if you want some bigger ships, you have some other options. You got the Fire Spray, a medium base platform, which, you know, in first edition, Fire Sprays, you know, apart from their initial release, were pretty not that great. But it looks like they're ready to make a big impact in second edition.
And there's a lot of ways you can load these ships out here. You've got a lot of great pilot options. We see Boba Fett coming over from first edition, carrying pretty much that same Scum and Villainy pilot ability, being able to reroll dice on offense or defense for each enemy ship at range 1. We also see some great abilities on Iman Azzamine, the initiative 4 pilot who can drop a device using the 3-turn or 3-straight templates rather than just that 1-straight template, which means this ship could be a pretty effective bomber with that. We've also got Cath Scarlet, who's got a brand new ability here. While you perform a primary attack, if there is at least one friendly non-limited ship at range 0 of the defender, roll 1 additional attack die.
Yeah, so what I like about these pilot abilities is they're not just all reinforcing different modifications or maneuverabilities. They're rewarding a lot of specific play styles. You know, Iman Azmin supporting putting a lot of bombs on the fire spray, and Cath Scarlet, you want a bunch of ships to block and get in range zero of a defender and then really boost up Cath's attack power. The fire spray is just all about versatility of options here. You know, it also has three titles. You got the Slave One, the Marauder, and the Andrasta, which really also impact how you can load out your ship, giving it different upgrade options. I particularly like the Slave One granting the enhanced mobility options.
But then you also have titles like the Andrasta title, which grants you that white reload action, which is incredibly valuable, especially if you're going to be carrying a bunch of devices. I think it's pretty safe to say that the Fire Spray in second edition is going to be a lot more versatile than the first edition variant. I think the medium base is going to help it a lot, make it more maneuverable, and it's got that really strong reinforce action natively, which adds to its defense substantially. So I think this is going to be a really durable option, and I think it's going to be one of the go-tos you have for Scum and Villainy. Pair this guy up with a couple of Fang Fighters, and I think you've got a pretty solid list.
Absolutely, and of course, the Mandalorians, I think, are going to just pair great together.
Last year, we've got the customized YT-1300, aka Lando's Millennium Falcon, as well as the Escape Craft. We talked a lot about these in the last couple weeks here, but Carson, did you want to throw in some input on how you're feeling about this ship now that we've seen a lot of information on it?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, if we're just talking about the context of the Wave 1 format, this ship is going to stand out by just being the only large base ship option. It's going to be able to move faster and control more of the zone just by being a large base getting in the way. I mean, this kit also comes with some interesting playstyle options, synergy with working with obstacles, and then, you know, it's got that Lando's Millennium Falcon title, which boosts its damage output if the defender is stressed.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this expansion overall. Within the context of Wave 1, though, I think it's going to be a trickier one to use effectively with that weapon value of only 2, even though it's got those turret arcs. It's going to be a little bit harder to make this ship effective, but I think in the hands of a skilled player using a pilot like Han Solo at Initiative 6 and getting that, you know, trick shot-like effect inherently, I think you're going to be able to do a lot of damage with this ship. It's just going to take a lot of work. And as far as the escape craft goes, I mean, the fact that it has coordinate, I think, is enough to make it a pretty viable choice to add into a list, assuming it's cheap enough.
Yeah, it's tough because that's such a good ability if you get to trigger, if your opponent does have stress, but there's just not any great way to deal out stress within this Wave 1 format. But, you know, there's linked actions, there's red actions. You know, players will take red maneuvers, so you can punish them for that with utilizing that Lando's Millennium Falcon title. Or, you know, you could opt not to use it and maybe take the cheaper version of the customized YT-1300 just as a large base blocker. You know, that's an interesting option. I think the usability here of the customized YT-1300 is really going to depend on its point costs because, you know, that damage output just doesn't quite seem there for a large base ship for what we would want. But, you know, if it's cheap enough, I think it could work. It could find a role.
I think it does complement the other ships, though, that are available in this faction from the start. So I think it'll find a place. It's a little trickier to use. Looking at the overall themes of Scum and Villainy in Wave 1, I think there's an emphasis on really aggressive play. You've got some great options here. A lot of high initiative pilots, Han Solo and Fenrau, both come in at Initiative 6. You then got Initiative 5 options in Old Tarok and Boba Fett. And you've got just a lot of boost actions across all these ships here. Most of the ships in this faction have access to a boost option, which means in general they're going to be very aggressive just by virtue of having those boost abilities.
And, you know, while the faction doesn't have that many synergy abilities, or really any synergy abilities, you know, if you just blow up your opponent's synergy abilities, then you're on an even playing field. And I think that's what the Scum faction is going to do best, just aggression forward. You got your fangs boosting into range one and still getting a focus action. Your fire sprays have that boost action, as well as a lot of other abilities and ways to deal damage differently. And, you know, you can support that with the escape craft, giving some much needed coordinate action, setting up torpedo attacks. So I think you just have a lot of options for dealing a lot of damage in kind of a lot of diverse ways.
Honestly, amongst the initial wave of ships here, I am actually really favoring Scum and Villainy. I think they just have so many great offensive options and these are just really aggressive, maneuverable ships. And I think that's going to be really important early on. If there is anything that's going to hold them back, I think not having access to any Force users could be a big problem. We've got Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker and the other two factions. And from what we can tell, those Force charges and Force abilities are going to be really important and really powerful.
Yeah, I mean, the Scum faction is obviously where I'm going to start off with my second edition experience. Definitely putting some Fang fighters down and probably a Fire Spray. But I think, you know, going up against the Rebel faction is going to be pretty tough. Those synergy abilities, I think they're going to stack really well, be difficult to deal with. Imperial Swarms, you know, might be an issue. But I think those Fang fighters might be able to dance around them. And that reinforce on the Fire Spray is going to make those TIE fighters' guns feel pretty underwhelming. You know, and the Rebels have Luke Skywalker, which is another great anti-swarm ship. So I think, you know, looking at this format, I'd probably favor equally the Rebels and Scum.
Now that we've looked at all three of these factions just in their Wave 1 content, I'm actually excited because I feel like they are pretty distinct right away. Now, if they can retain faction identity as the game advances and as more waves come out, that would be great, and that's going to be important here. But right from the start, I feel like we've got some pretty distinct mechanics and themes in each of these factions, and I hope they can maintain that through the rest of the life of the game.
Absolutely. It'll be really interesting to see what gets added to these factions as new waves come out as well, and to see just kind of what formats Fantasy Flight does decide to support moving forward. I think they have a really interesting opportunity here, you know, to really challenge veteran players and make X-Wing more accessible by having multiple formats. So I hope it's something that they do capitalize on.
Well, just about 2 months until we see the official release on September 13th. So hopefully we'll get some more information from Fantasy Flight about formats and these new ships coming out. I'm still really hyped for second edition, though. Excited to see these ships finally hit the table.
Absolutely, but I do really want to see some point costs.
Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you like the show, please go on to facebook.com/RadioTCX and like our Facebook page.
You can follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast.
And if you really enjoy the show, please go on to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review along with a comment saying what you like about the podcast and what other people would be interested in listening.
And if you want to support the show directly, please consider going on to patreon.com/radiotcx and becoming a supporter of the show today. It really means so much to us.
Again, guys, thank you so much for listening. Carson, glad you're back on the show. And we will talk to you all next week.
Hold on, Tim. Before we go, I do want to just give one big shout out to Josh Ackerman, who just won a store championship flying 5 X-Wings. Congratulations, Josh. Well earned.
Yeah, and if any of you guys have won a store championship, be sure to let us know. We'd love to give our Radio TCX store champions a shout-out on the podcast. I think this was Josh's first store championship, so I'm really proud. It's a crap.